This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Hey, friends and neighbors, this is episode number 86 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris. Why are you crying?
Because they've banned my card.
Oh, yes. I saw.
My mentions have been trash. I just want to throw that out there. Like, everybody and their brother has tagged me in that goddamn announcement. I'm just saying. So we're going to talk about the banned and restricted announcements a little later, because I certainly have a lot of thoughts on that. But before we delve into the bad, let's go ahead and start off with the good. Chris, you and I went to GP Louisville this past weekend. Did you have a good time?
I did. I had a really awesome time. I didn't do the main, but I did a bunch of sides and got to hang out with people, and that was a lot of fun. Erin and I got to stay with some friends of ours, Lisa, Abby, Miranda, and Sarah, and it was a really awesome experience getting to know each other, and we're all different players with different play styles and different formats that we find interesting, and just to pick each other's brain and have a good time and laugh and just hang out was a really awesome experience. I don't often get to hang out with too many women altogether, so that was a little bit of a trip and a half. And also having to share two bathrooms between like six people, that's pretty hilarious. And I got to meet some fans from the show that I either hadn't met before or I got to see again, and that was really nice. I played in, I think, four modern challenges. Because I didn't exactly make it to the fifth one, but that was okay. I ended up going 2-2 in all of them except for one that I dropped from early. And got some cool prize wall tickets. I got two new pins for my bag and a couple tokens. So I have some little spoils. Picked up some surprises for some friends and some new cards for myself. And just had a good time just kind of trying to relax and just enjoy myself. I think I played very well this past weekend. Even having other people that were watching me play tell me, you know, you've improved in this area, or I really liked that you did this play. And so it was nice to get some good feedback. The place that it was at, we felt like we were in a barn all weekend. So it was very interesting. And Lisa did point out to me at one point that there had been a light that had been swinging back and forth like all weekend. And if that thing dropped, it was going to be a bad deal. So that was a little funny. We ate very well. The weather was not the best, but it wasn't the worst. And I was just really glad that I ended up being able to go at the last minute, and I'm really glad that I went, and it was totally an awesome time, and I definitely want to see all of the girls we stayed with again and hope to see them soon.
Yeah, I feel the same about you, you know, as you do, Chris, in the sense that, you know, I don't often get to spend time with that many women, and specifically trans women, you know, with the exception of Chris. You know, all of the people staying at our house, we called it the hashtag trans mafia house because we were all trans women. And so to be, you know, in a room with that many people and to not feel alone felt really, really great. And, you know, like Chris said, we're all different trans women, too. You know, some of us are maybe a little bit more liberal than the others, or maybe a bit more conservative than the others, or we've had very different experiences, and you know, we've all started transitioning at different points, and so it was really great to come together and get those opinions and those perspectives. It felt a lot like Caitlyn Jenner's bus ride, but way less problematic. If you've ever watched the Caitlyn Jenner documentary, she brought like five of her best trans girlfriends on a bus ride. And it was like that, but without all of the controversy. And we just had a really, really good time. And I really love each and every one of them. And we had a lot of fun together. I think the thing for me, like the theme of GP Louisville for me really was confidence. I ended up dropping at 3-4. And I think a lot of the reason why I didn't do well was I wasn't very confident in my deck. I'd only been playing Black Red Reanimator for about a month, and I don't get to play lot of paper magic, so most of my experience has been online, and it's very different to play in paper when you've never really played the deck. You know, when you're home alone in your computer, you're in your sweats, you're eating Cheetos, you're in your comfort space, you don't have people in front of you and to your left and your right watching you play, and so I just felt like there was a lot more pressure. I felt like I was making a lot of punts that I clearly could see that I did, and I really, you know, I also wasn't sure I had the right 75, like I wasn't sure about it going into the event, and I really felt like the confidence just wasn't there, and it showed. It showed in my performance, and so I can't help but wonder if maybe I should have taken Dredge, even though it wasn't good, simply because I knew the deck and I was able to play it more seamlessly than I was Reanimator. And that was sort of proven when I played inside events, because I came back for Sunday and played Modern Challenges, and I was playing so tight in those challenges. I was not missing a single Bloodgast trigger. I was playing around Anger of the Gods. I was doing everything right, and I was like, where was this girl yesterday? And the bottom line was I just didn't have the confidence. I didn't feel like I knew what I was doing, and it really, really showed. So, you know, the takeaway from the weekend for me, you know, as I'm trying to take away things from, you know, crummy situations, is that, you know, I either should have practiced more, or I should have played the deck that I felt better about and that I really could say that I knew, because, you know, doing well in two leagues and streaming a couple nights with the deck is not nearly enough practice for a GP. And I really felt like I paid for it. So going forward, if I do any more events, and I will this year, but not very many, I definitely want to do more practice than just two streams, call it a day, especially if it's a deck I've never played before. So, but otherwise the venue was really great. Chris brought up a really good point. Apparently it's normally used to like do horse races. Jeremy Noel, who's one of the coverage guys from Star City Games, had introduced himself, and he told me a little bit of history about the venue, and he was joking with me, and we came up with the conclusion that, all of the pros who don't do well need to come back on the second day and do horse races. And then we need to bring Evan Irwin back and have him do like the really fast auctioneer voice. Like, Todd Anderson's going around the bend, and Brad Nelson's going to be number five, and we can just take bets on the pros. I thought that would have been really great. But that ended up not happening. But on the plus side, Reed Duke ended up winning the whole damn thing.
Mm-hmm. I heard.
Which was really awesome. Our friend Lisa is also a Reed Duke fangirl, so I had to introduce her. And it was so cute because Reed, of course, was Reed, and he was like, hey, Lisa, nice to meet you. And Lisa's kind of stumbling for what to say, and finally all she can come up with is, I follow you on the internet. And Reed's like, a lot of people do. And she's like, I know, I'm just gonna watch you play. And it was just so great to watch her fangirl over him. And he's great, of course, and so that was really awesome.
Cool.
So while we were away, they revealed the entire Aether Revolt set. Every card has been spoiled. And what did you all think of the set? Are there any cards in particular that you're looking forward to?
So if I were more of a brewer, which I'm not, but I'm kind of eager to see what the brewers come up with, Chris, I was looking through the full spoiler, and I'm kind of excited for Rishkar Prima Renegade. Which is a creature for, 2 and a green, and it's a 2/2. And when he enters, you put a 1/1 counter on each of up to 2 target creatures. And then each creature you control with a counter on it has tap, add a green to your mana pool. And I'm just like, envisioning this card in a commander deck that already has to do with counters, and then just making like an absurd amount of mana. And then hopefully hoofing all over their opponents.
Hoof.
If anybody wants to send me a list or something cool that they come up with, I really like that card. And then a few others that I was excited about. I really like the flavor of the word improvise for the mechanic, because I feel like it really paints a picture of like all these people using all their inventions and stuff to try and fight back. And I don't know, I'm not much of a flavor person, but I just feel like improvise was like the perfect word choice for that. I really like the card Baral's Expertise, which is 3/2 blue, and you get to return 3 artifacts or creatures, and then you get to cast a converted mana cost of 4 or less from your hand for free. I really like bouncing creatures, especially in Limited, and I really like casting stuff for free, so you got the best of both worlds there. And then I have to have a special place in my heart for Dark Intimations. It's like the next Cruel Ultimatum. I have no idea if I'll ever see standard play. I kind of don't feel like it will, but I got to give it a shout out. So,
yeah.
There are a number of cards that I'm excited about. I'm excited about Baral himself. Baral, Chief of Compliance. He is a human wizard, my favorite creature type. and he makes instants and sorceries cost one less, which is pretty awesome. Also, he says that whenever a spell or ability you control counters a spell, you may draw a card. If you do, discard a card. He does so many things that I like, you know, so I'm really hoping that he finds a home in Standard. I'm not sure what that home is going to be yet, but I'm going to be doing a lot of testing in the next couple weeks, so hopefully we can find a good home for him. Another card that I'm pretty excited about, not necessarily for Standard, but a card that I'm looking forward to opening in Limited, is Lifecrafter's Bestiary. It's a 3-mana artifact, so you can put it in more or less any deck. At the beginning of your upkeep, scry 1. Seems pretty good. And whenever you cast a creature spell, you may pay a green mana, and if you do, draw a card. I like doing all those things. So yeah, I'm just pretty excited about the set in general. It seems like there are a lot of really cool energy cards, and energy was my favorite mechanic to play with in Limited in Kaladesh. So I'm just really looking forward to drafting this.
I have 6 cards that I specifically am excited about. The first one is Thopter Arrest, because I think it's pretty cool that we get an enchantment that'll allow you to, when Thopter Arrest enters the battlefield, you exile target artifact or creature an opponent controls until Thopter Arrest leaves the battlefield for 2 colorless and a white. I think that's pretty cool given Banishing Light and O-Ring in the past, and that would be nice to have right now because there's a secret part of me that really wants for control to be a thing. I like the Shielded Aether Thief as well as like a good flash blocker for a colorless and a blue. You also get 3 energy if you tap it and you get to draw a card, and whenever it blocks you get an energy and it's an 0/4, and that's pretty cool I think for both Constructed and for Limited. I also really like Restoration Specialist. God, the art on there is just killing me. It's just so beautiful. For colorless and a white, you get a 2/1, and if you pay a white, you can sacrifice it and return up to 1 target artifact card and up to 1 target enchantment card from your graveyard to your hand. So I think that's pretty cool. I also, of course, am about Disallow, which was spoiled a while ago, but still amazing. We need more counter spells. I'm always about that. Mechanized Production. I have plans for this. I just don't know exactly what. Probably more in Frontier, maybe, than in Standard. But it is 2 colorless and 2 blue for an enchantment aura that does... It says enchant artifact you control. At the beginning of your upkeep, create a token that's a copy of enchanted artifact. Then if you control 8 or more artifacts with the same name as one another, you win the game. And I'm all about funny ways to win the game, so I think that would be pretty cool. So I'm pretty much about that. And then the last one I plan to put into the Frontier deck that I'm actually working on right now, and that's Maverick Thopterist. For 3 colorless, a blue and a red, has Improvise, and when it enters the battlefield you create 2/1/1 colorless Thopter artifact creature tokens with flying, and they are a 2/2. And I'm all about artificers, and I'm all about Thopters. So you can probably guess what this Frontier deck is going to look like. So I'm pretty hyped for Aether Revolt. Maybe not for Standard, but for Frontier purposes.
I really like a lot of the flavor from the set. There aren't many cards that I like simply because they're good. I just love the flavor of them. You know, Hallie, you mentioned Baral, and Emma said that she thinks Baral's expertise is the best expertise in the cycle.
Not surprised.
So it's going to be interesting to see if that lives up to that. She mentioned that she was really a fan of the, you know, specifically against Ishkana, bounce all the tokens and do something dirty to Ishkana, and that way you get rid of it. And, you know, Ishkana seems like she could be a major player even after the ban, so any way that can, you know, get rid of her, I think, is a good thing. But yeah, there are so many things flavor-wise that I really enjoy. I really love Caught in the Brights. That is the poor gremlins. It's gremlins, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's a 2 and a white. It's an enchantment, enchant creature. The creature can't attack or block, and when a vehicle you control attacks, you exile enchanted creatures. So you're basically hitting whatever you've shown your lights on with a car. And the art has this really cute little gremlin that has these poor lights on, these really bright lights on them, and you know that they're gonna get hit by a vehicle. And somebody on Twitter was saying, retweet if you'd like to hit Emrakul with a car, because it can't, you can still put this on Emrakul. And how great of a flavor win would that be to just like run over Emrakul with your fleet wheel cruiser? I mean, come on. That's really, really dope. Sram's expertise is something that really, really scares me. It costs 2 and 2 white. It's you create 3/1/1 colorless servos, and then you can cast a card with converted mana cost 3 or less. And Sun and Moon is a deck that some people insist on playing in Modern for some reason, and there's a lot of really nasty enchantments that you could play with this, where it's like, here's 3 servos and a Blood Moon, or here's 3 servos and a Ghostly Prison. And I'm like, oh no, oh, oh no. So I'm hoping they don't catch wind of this, because there's some really horrible enchantments that you can drop immediately after, you know, throwing a couple servos on the board. Fatal Push, I think, is going to make a huge impact in Eternal formats. Revolt is not difficult to activate or to have happen. And so to be able to kill things, I know some Merfolk players were really worried about Fatal Push, because you're able to kill something like Master of Waves or Lord of Atlantis or anything you want to, really, with just the one black, with any creature that really sees play in Modern. That's a really, really good card. I love all the new Aetherborn, Gifted Aetherborn, which they're calling Vampire Nightwalk, Vampire Fauxhawk. I've seen all sorts of names for this card. I'm just the messenger. I didn't name it, but that's a really popular card. Midnight Entourage, which I'm going to change my drag name to. Yeheni, Undying Partisan. I really, really love that card. Again, Flavor Win. Whenever the creature an opponent controls dies, you can put a counter on it, which reflects Yeheni being able to steal life. And then sacrificing a creature, you're keeping Yeheni alive, essentially. And the flavor text is everything. I mean, the time for subtlety is over, darling.
Yeah.
My God. Yeheni is me. I love it. And then the card that really impressed me the most the night before we left for the GP is Kari Zev, Skyship Raider. Mm-hmm. She's a 1 and a red, 1/3 legendary creature. Human Pirate.
Yes.
Human Pirate. Lady Pirate. Hello. First strike and menace. And then the best part is whenever she attacks, you create a legendary 2/1 red monkey creature token named Roggavan. That's tapped and attacking, and then you exile it at the end of combat. Legendary monkey.
Have we seen that token yet? Because that sounds awesome.
We have seen it, and it's adorable. And the thing I find more interesting is that there were more people excited about the legendary monkey token than there were when Ulrich was spoiled. Remember when that legendary werewolf was spoiled? And Mara was like, you guys have been asking for this forever, and here it is. And people were like, Can you do it right? Can you take it back? Like, you know, it was such a disappointment, but there was not a single person on my feed that was not hyped for that monkey. So I think Kari Zev is really dope. I really like her expertise as well. The flavor text is great. I also discovered that apparently in the lore, she's a teenager, which is really dope. So you have like a teenage girl pirate. And I'm really, really here for that. What do you all think about Splinter Twin and Standard? Because with Saheeli, we now have also this white card. Mm-hmm. And it is called Felidar. It's a cat of some kind. Felidar Guardian. Mm-hmm. So for 3 and a white, when it enters the battlefield, you can exile another permanent you control and then return that card to the battlefield under its owner's control, and it's a 1/4. So if you have Saheeli in play, you can make a Felidar token, and then blink the token and then just keep repeating and have a bunch of cat beasts.
I feel like we're just getting some mixed messages from Wizards. Like, what do they want us to do? They ban Splinter Twin and then reprint Splinter Twin, and then they're like, have some fun, but don't have too much fun, because then we'll ban it again. And it's just like, I don't know. I'm not sure what to think about it yet. I don't feel like I would like to place all my eggs in that basket.
Yeah, it seems like it'd be... I feel like there are tools to stop it. It seems like it's a little slower. I mean, not having Flash is certainly a thing. You know, there are kill spells in the format. Grasp of Darkness is still around. You know, Negate is still certainly a thing to get rid of Saheeli. We do still have Ruinous Path in the format. I don't think it would be as difficult to interact with as Splinter Twin was. And it seems like we're already kind of in a combo-y place with Standard, what with Marvel hanging around. And I'm not sure. I know when the ban and restricted announcement announcement came out today. Like, they sent a tweet first saying that they were going to make an announcement. And so a lot of people assumed that it was just going to be about Felidar Guardian, because it didn't seem like Wizards knew that it was possible. Like, the first thing people thought of was Splinter Twin. And it seemed like the few people from Wizards that were speaking up were like, can you elaborate on that? Like, it just never crossed their mind that this could be a thing. And so I think a lot of people were really disappointed when the beginning and restricted announcement had nothing to do with this. And so mm-hmm. people were like, oh, so you're fine with this. Okay.
Yeah.
The other card I'm really excited about that I forgot to cover is Hope of Ghirapur. That is an artifact that costs one colorless. And it has an effect similar to Xanthid Swarm. If any of our friends play Legacy, you'll be familiar with that card, specifically Legacy Storm. And it is, so it's one in a colorless. It's a legendary artifact Thopter. So a legendary Thopter flying 1/1, you can sacrifice it. And until your next turn, a target player who was dealt combat damage can't cast non-creature spells. So you swing in with this really harmless looking creature and then you sacrifice it and then you essentially get a silence. So if you're trying to do something, you will not really be interrupted by your opponents. And so that's a really great card. I've heard talk of Legacy Reanimator adopting this, which I've been playing, and it looks really, really dope. What do you also think about the reprints? They reprinted Ornithopter and Shock.
My friend, who is a Red Aggro player, has already started brewing up a deck with Ornithopter and Reckless Bushwhacker. So we'll see how that goes.
I actually think that's not a bad idea, you know, with them banning Smuggler's Copter, which we're going to talk about in a little while. You know, we've talked about how red is oftentimes a safety valve for a format. And if we do have these sort of going big decks and these really combo-y decks, I really think it's important to, I can't believe I'm saying we need a red deck right now, but I certainly feel like it can't hurt, you know, in lieu of these decks that have been running around lately, the sort of mid-range game we've all been playing. And so, you know, to see Shock back and to see these other things, I think that might be what Standard needs right now.
Yep.
So, we've talked about it enough. this morning, there was a tweet posted by the official Magic account forewarning us that in 5 hours from when the tweet was posted, they were going to make the banned and restricted announcement. And this was very shocking to people because typically the announcement is made after the pre-release, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. And they usually don't forewarn you. Like, it's just a thing that's coming and we all know that it's coming. And so when this tweet was posted, a lot of people wondered what could it be. You know, we just got done having a Legacy GP. Miracles again did very well. Some people thought it might be related to that. Some people thought it might have to do with the Felidar card that we talked about and Splinter Twin being in Standard. But the announcement came out and it was revealed that there were three bans in Standard. Emrakul, the Promised End is banned. Smuggler's Copter is banned and Reflector Mage is banned. For the record, there have not been bans in Standard since, what, 5 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, since the Cobblade days. And that was Skullclamp, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is a pretty big deal. And they did give some explanation as to why they made these decisions. And they said with Emrakul, she was created to be scary, but she ended up being a little too scary. And ultimately, just too much for Standard. Smuggler's Copter, they simply said it's too efficient, and it shows up in too many decks, which diminishes the diversity of the deck. They said it was something that they wanted to do because it was creative and fun, and that they pushed it a little bit so that people would play it, but that ultimately they pushed it too far. And Reflector Mage, they said that White-Blue Flash was just too powerful against the field, and that it's kind of been on the radar since the Collected Company days, and that the card kept coming up time and time again as being frustrated, and a targeted way to sort of diminish the White-Blue Flash decks. You know, what do you all think about this? You know, the fact that Standard has bans now, and what do you think this means for the format?
I was honestly really surprised because, like you said, we haven't seen bans in 5 years. So I've only been playing Magic for 4 years. So in my Magic lifetime, there has not been a Standard ban. And I saw Standard bans as a thing of the past. Like, okay, this is something that happened during Cobblade. Like, okay, they had to emergency ban Stoneblade Mystic and Jace the Mind Sculptor. Like, those days were behind us. Like, we don't have to deal with that anymore. And so hearing that these cards are being banned in Standard just seemed like incomprehensible to me. And, you know, I have played a bit of Standard this season. I've played Reflector Mage a lot. I've played against Emrakul a lot. You know, I was just testing with a friend of mine for the Pro Tour recently, and we were, you know, just playing some current Standard to get our feet wet. And we played a lot of Reflector Mages and Emrakuls, and it just seemed like, okay, this is what it is. It didn't feel oppressive or non-interactive. I actually enjoyed our games quite a bit, and so I was surprised that these bans came down the pipeline, and I don't know. I don't really have a positive or a negative reaction to it, strangely enough. You know, I just kind of accept bans when they happen. You know, they are what they are. They're ultimately business decisions for Wizards, and hopefully, you know, for the good of the game. But I guess the reaction that I had was more to the people reacting to the bans. I heard a lot of people saying things like, you know, how terrible it must be that, you know, we have to ban things in Standard, and saying that this is like a failure on Wizards' part, that, you know, they messed up and we have these totally powerful cards in Standard. And I think that's a little misguided. I think that, you know, as the announcement said, Emrakul is supposed to be this earth-shattering force, and it makes sense for the card to be format warping if that's the case. You know, it we want cards to be flavorful, we want cards to be evocative of the story, and that makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, it's a very tricky line to walk, because we want there to be exciting cards, because if there aren't, then we end up with a format like, you know, Kamigawa Standard, where, you know, the cards are very underpowered. You know, we kept seeing these seesaws earlier in Magic's history, where, we had to tone down after Urza Saga, or we had to tone down after Mirrodin. And I'm actually really happy with where Magic is right now, and I'm not sure that these bans necessarily mean that we're going back to that. I think that card design is actually in a very good place, and I think that, you know, every once in a while, if a format does become too stale, or, you know, there are a lot of cards that are seeing a lot of play, I don't think it's really a problem for Wizards to decide to change things up a little bit.
What would you say to people who feel like, because I saw this sentiment floating around as well, that, you know, we even discussed this on the show a little while back, you know, about people who feel like there wasn't enough hate in the format, or that the hate wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people who, when before either Revolt had been completely spoiled, there were people that were saying, just give me Pithing Needle. Like, right. That, I'd be completely fine with that. You know, there were people in regards to Graveyard Hate, there were people that were like, we'll even take Cranial Archive. Like, you know, we're not asking for Rest in Peace. We're not asking for Scavenging News, but we're asking for something. And, you know, even energy, it's like maybe there's a card, you know, we've seen cards like Burning Earth before that punish people for having, you know, non-basic lands. And let's say you have too much energy in the case of the Marvel decks, where, you know, if you accumulate so much energy and you don't use it, maybe there's like a damage effect or something. And, you know, there were some people that said, well, if you just gave us some hate cards, and they don't even have to necessarily be great hate cards, you know, we could have maybe fought these strategies better. Like, do you think that's a valid criticism?
I think it is valid, and that's a thought that I have definitely had myself when looking at this Standard landscape. But, you know, we have to put our trust in Wizards, because, you know, they make the game we assume they know best. And I don't know. Like, if we're not getting hate cards, my assumption is that there's a very good reason for that we just don't know yet. And that's always my assumption with these kinds of things.
Sure. Katie and Chris, did you have any thoughts on the Standard bans?
Yeah, I feel like the bans, when I read them, I was more interested than any other emotion, because we've had stale Standards before. Like, when Mono Blue and Mono Black were prevalent, they were prevalent for a year where one of them would win a tournament, and there was never any bans then. And it seems like recently there has been an increase in the number of bans just on Wizards' end that seems to be their way of shaking up the format, which, while I love a good format shakeup, and like if nobody's feelings had to be taken into account, which I guess Wizards doesn't have to take anybody's feelings into account, you know, shaking up the format, I think, is healthy. I think it inspires innovation and deck building and new creative decks, and I think that's what Wizards is trying to get at. But I also feel like, I mean, you can't just ban everybody's deck all the time and expect everybody to rebound from their money losses and, you know, build a new deck all the time. And so it's kind of a fine balance, and I feel like I am excited to see what comes out of it, but I'm a little worried that, you know, people's trust in wizards is going to diminish. I mean, we've seen it in Modern where people get upset that their deck gets banned and they're very expensive decks. And you see it now that these expensive cards are getting banned and thus the deck is, you know, maybe we'll see that deck still be prevalent just without that card and something else instead. But more likely, you know, a new deck will form completely. And so all of that wasted money that consumers are investing, it does seem like something that I don't know if I'm sure Wizards is taking into account, but also on the flip side, it feels pretty bad if you're one of the people playing those decks and now you're like, oh, I invested all my money in this and now I can't play it. What am I supposed to do in Standard now? So, you know, if I wasn't worried for those people, I love format shakeups and I'm excited to see what comes out of it. But at the same time, I can see how people are upset that, you know, their deck got taken away as well as all the other good decks. So I guess we'll just see how it falls out. But I am a little worried going forward that the bannings are going to become more frequent to inspire innovation. Just because Standard used to be, it kind of seemed like Standard used to be where every deck kind of had its limelight from week to week and the meta was shifting. And it seems like the last few years, maybe it's been tending towards just a few decks taking hold and there's not a ton of innovation to beat those decks or not a ton of ways to beat those decks. So it's just like, well, if you can't beat them, join them. And I don't think people are having fun with that scenario either.
You've all given me a lot to think about. but I still... I don't think that, me personally, Emrakul should have been banned. I don't think that she was necessarily an issue. I think there were other things that were making her more of an issue. But at the same time, it's Emrakul. She's a badass bitch. You know, she's a force to be reckoned with. You know, I agree with Hallie about, you know, if we're going to be looking at the story, especially like Wizards wants us to, and we're looking at the flavor and other things, that's just how that card's going to be. That's not a surprise to me. Am I sad that she kind of had to get the axe? Yes, that's very unfortunate. In regard to Smuggler's Copter, I guess I'm just surprised that Wizards is surprised that people would play good card because it's good. I mean, it's like, why wouldn't you play a Smuggler's Copter? I mean, it's a 2-drop to get a 3/3 that flies and has a loot effect. Anyone in their right mind would put that into just about any deck. Seems like not a bad move. It's unfortunate that it got banned just because it's good. I mean, are we really just going to start banning cards just because they're good? That seems like a bad idea. Reflector Mage to me just seems a little late to the party. And if it was such a problem with Coco, why didn't they do something about it then? Mm-hmm. Why do they care now? It's like, stop trying to mess with control-esque elements. Like, I get that maybe you don't want control, but other people do. You know, there are people that like those type of archetypes, and I don't think that they're too oppressive. I think that everything can have a place, but again, like we've said before, you got to have checks and balances in there. And I just don't know why you wouldn't give people proper tools to handle decks that can be a little more intimidating. So I think that all three of these bannings are a little silly. And if Standard is what you're trying to sell people on, why would you ban cards in that format when it's supposed to be the big rage, the big deal, your big thing? I just don't understand that at all. So I guess I'm glad I didn't really invest into anything in Standard, that I got my Smuggler's Copters essentially for freezies, and I'll just use them in Frontier because they're still legal there. So I guess we'll see how that works. But yes. In my opinion, very silly.
Yeah, I agree with Katie and, you know, regarding the feeling of confidence. You know, I feel like people play Standard because they don't want to have to worry about the banhammer. You know, I think on some level, those of us who play Modern, Legacy, and even Vintage understand that going into it, that we've seen the history of bannings that have happened, where bannings have happened almost annually. And so we know in the back of our minds that our decks could go at any time. You know, we've watched Splinter Twin go, Amulet Bloom go, Birthing Pod go, and we're loath to admit it, but we know that it could always happen. And, you know, whenever people complain about it, we usually jokingly will say, well, go play standard if you don't want to deal with combo decks, and go play standard if you want to be able to, you know, not have to worry about this. And now they're having to worry about it. And so, you know, you are giving a group of people a fear that may not have ever had that fear before. And, you know, again, there are those of us who play Eternal formats more that have become kind of numb to it in a way. And, you know, I definitely feel for the people that thought that this wouldn't happen because it's standard. And now, you know, it'd be one thing if it was one card, it'd be one thing if it was two cards, but it's three cards. And it just so happens that they affect multiple decks. You know, green-black Delirium can still very much be a black-green value deck, but what is your Delirium really going to get you now? Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to have that big finisher. The Marvel decks can certainly still Marvel into Ulamog, which is nothing to cry about, but, you know, there's something that affects that. And blue-white has certainly been crippled by this. You know, you're taking out at least two of their major players. And then by taking out blue-white, you're essentially taking away that safety valve that kept Marvel in check. And so these are very drastic changes to standard, and I'm interested to see how they shake down, but I do hope that they don't do more harm than good, because for a format that's not used to these things, it's a really big deal.
I had one other thing to add to this. There was another piece of the announcement that I think may have gotten lost in a lot of the, oh my gosh, they banned Emrakul scuffle. And that was that at the end of the BNR announcement, they said that they're actually changing how they make BNR announcements or when they make them. Towards the end of the article, it says, banned and restricted announcements will now be made both on the Monday after standard legal set pre-releases and 5 weeks after a Pro Tour, also on a Monday. And this is because, you know, the Pro Tour does shake up the meta, and that affects the entire rest of the season. And so if something happens at the Pro Tour, there's the opportunity to ban or unban something based on how the Pro Tour goes. And I'm pretty happy about this, and I was wondering what you guys thought of it, too.
I like that they added the disclaimer underneath it that said, we don't expect this to lead to an increase in the number of cards being banned or restricted, because I think when some people saw that, they were more concerned, where it's like, oh, are you going to be doing more bannings? Like, is that what we have to look forward to? And so I appreciate that they dropped that little segment in there, that that's not the goal, that they're not looking to, you know, actively ban things. I think if anything, they're just being more vigilant and keeping a better eye out instead of having to, you know, so that when things do crop up, not that they're expecting them to, but that there's less time to wait in between, instead of going, oh great, we've got 90 days of this, or however many long we have. And I appreciated it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Same here. I think that it's good for them to have a time. It's like they scheduled a time slot for themselves if they needed it, but that doesn't mean that they will need it, which I think is better for everyone, just so people can know that it's coming. If they are like, oh yeah, this thing's really broken, I think it's going to get banned, they can make whatever speculations. But, you know, it doesn't mean that Wizards is going to be like, ban this and ban this and ban for you and ban for me. So I think it's good that they have like it scheduled out more often than they did.
You didn't even do the Oprah voice, Katie, of you get a ban, you get a ban, you get a ban, ban's back up.
Sorry, Aaron. Missed opportunity.
No, it's totally fine. We'll just save it for another day, perhaps. So speaking of formats that are used to bans, in Modern, there were two announcements. The first one is Gataxian Probe. They said that Gataxian Probe increased the number of turn three kills in a few ways, by particularly giving perfect information and a card, which allows decks to make strategic decisions about going all in. This hurt the ability of decks to effectively bluff, or for the aggressive deck to missequence their turn. Ultimately, the card did too much for too little cost. And,
the one.
Hold me, Chris. Just hold me. We were in the car ride home, and Chris and I were hitting refresh like maniacs. And Chris got there first. And Chris says, MTA tweeted a link. I'm not sure it's real, but you're not going to like it. And I'm like, oh, no. Oh, no. I'm thinking it's Simeon Spirit Guide, because that's the one I've heard most people complain about. And I'm like, all right, let's click the link. And so Golgari Grave Troll. Dredge, the mechanic in the deck has a negative impact on Modern by pushing the format too far towards a battle of sideboards. With the printing of Cathartic Reunion and Prized Amalgam, the deck once again became unhealthy for the format. While those cards were discussed, the real offender has always been the dredge mechanic itself. You know what the real offender to me was? That y'all didn't capitalize the second D in dredge. You're going to talk about me, make sure you spell my name right. You capitalized the first D, but just for a little bit of shade, you lowercased it as if to say, oh, you're a small D now because you lost your piece. Very upset by that. What do you two think about this? You know, these are two decks that are, what do you guys think about this? These are two decks that have been very popular for quite a while, and these are both cards that people suggested to maybe help Modern a little bit, and it looks like Wizards came through.
Well, I'm wondering, like, how much Golgari Grave Troll actually affects Dredge anyway, because it seems like most of the deck is just, like, Insolent Neonate, Cathartic Reunion, and Prized Amalgams. Like, can the deck function without Grave Troll?
We can use Golgari Thug. Golgari Thug is only Dredge 4, so ideally we're dredging like one or two cards less. But even if you just use Stinkweed Imp with Cathartic Reunion, you're still dredging 15 cards, which is still nothing to cry about.
Yeah.
I don't think that this is going to hurt us too much. I think that the deck is still going to be viable. I don't know if we're going to be like the ultimate tier 1, but I think that we can easily be tier 1.5 and even a very strong tier 2. You know, like we've seen other decks do. You know, Tron is still a thing in Modern, even without Eye of Ugin. The Eldrazi decks that we know from Eldrazi Winter have survived as banned Eldrazi. After the Birthing Pod bans, that deck evolved into Abzan Company. Even Jun, you know, Jun survived the Deathrite Shaman bannings. You know, I certainly don't think that this is the end of Dredge. I think that it does slow it down just a little bit. Like, it makes the possibility of chaining into your dredges less likely. But we could easily use Golgari Thug. Golgari Thug could even push us into like a greater Gargadon kind of build where you're able to put your Narcomoebas back. I think it's still possible for the deck to survive. I don't think that this is the end by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, it seems like, and I hate to say this, Aaron, but maybe that was a good ban on their part because the deck can still exist, yeah, but won't be so overbearing for every other deck. That, I mean, I hope that Dredge can still snag tournaments and win like every other deck and doesn't get pushed to the point where people are like, oh, it's just not good enough, because I don't really want to see it go away entirely. But, mm-hmm, you know, when people kind of caught onto the Dredge train, they were like, oh yeah, this is pretty good. And it is very difficult for a lot of other decks to stop. So I feel like that was a pretty good card for them to pick to allow the deck to still, you know, continue on, but maybe not be as overbearing. The Gitaxian Probe, I mean, people have talked about for forever, and it kind of seems like a little random that the ban happened now, like, to me. But I guess I wasn't, like, sad to see it go. I mean, it wasn't a hugely expensive card. I don't play a bunch of decks that have it. I mean, I play decks that play blue that could play it. But oftentimes, you know, I'm more on the controlling side. So it just kind of, I don't know, I guess I was pretty neutral on that one. I was like, okay, see ya. Let's get the next thing in here.
Both of them kind of irked me for different reasons, but I'm less sad about Gitaxian Probe only because it does slow down Infect, which is fine with me. However, it just sucks that it would have to affect, like, a handful of other decks that also run Gitaxian Probe that are not overly oppressive. And I don't think that they were getting, like, a humongous advantage from having Gitaxian Probe in it. It will remain to be seen, I guess, what Infect does. I know there were some people, I won't mention names, that were encouraging using Peak in Infect. Now, if someone reveals a peak to me, I'm going to be like, okay, well, all right. But that one makes more sense. Again, not surprised to happen. It's just unfortunate it had to hit some other decks. The Golgari Grave Troll thing just doesn't make any sense to me. Of all the things that you were going to ban, of all the other decks you were going to look at, to me, personally, with all the Modern I've been playing within the last year, I just don't see why they needed to mess with anything in Dredge. I agree that if they just dredge their brains out effectively, they're going to be able to probably win pretty quickly. But it wasn't like there wasn't ways to shut it down. And I know that they mentioned that people are having to pack too many things in the sideboard to deal with Dredge, but I can't think of that many things that would be taking up so many slots in your sideboard that you would be like quaking in your boots over Dredge. And a lot of the cards that you could use to deal with Dredge, they're multi-versatile. You would be able to use them versus other decks as well. So I'm just sad that a deck that got like nuked before, got a chance to come back, had two cards printed for it that were going to help it become a more powerful deck than it had been within the last couple of years, that's gone through several different iterations, and then just kind of be like, we gave you nice things and then we took them away. And so it's just kind of disappointing to me that of all the decks they were going to look at, Dredge was the one. So it's just unfortunate. Mm-hmm. And I'm not just saying that because I like Aaron. I mean that legitimately.
Or you're off the cast.
So yeah, those are my feels.
Yeah, obviously I'm annoyed by this, and I feel like some of the reasons just don't really hold. You know, somebody brought this up on Twitter, you know, the explanation for Grave Troll sounds almost personal. You know, when they end it by saying, well, the real offender has always been the Dredge mechanic itself. To me, it sounds like saying they just don't want us here. That's frankly how it sounds. You know, when they say, you know, it has a negative impact on modern by pushing us towards a battle of sideboards. Well, Affinity forces you to have a sideboard, forces you to have the silver bullet. Tron forces you to have the right sideboard. Even Burn forces you to have the sideboard. You know, that's what modern is. And, you know, that's something that a lot of people complain about, but ultimately we understand that to be the case. And, you know, I'm not really sure how Dredge contributes to that any more than any of the other decks that I've named do. You know, if you are preparing for a modern event, you should have Graveyard Hate with you anyways, because you could face Goryeo's Vengeance. Even having a Relic of Progenitus is fine against the Gen decks. It helps keep Tarmogoyf down. You know, the Jeskai decks, you know, if you're playing a Gifts Rights deck, like that's just a sphere of modern that you should already be preparing for. Yeah. And so, you know, I don't think it's something that I feel like it's done a really good job of keeping Dredge in a safe place. You know, if you look at the results, I don't think it's been enough time. You know, when Eldrazi Winter happened, we were seeing literal dominance, like 30, 40, 50% of the format, like people were going to major events and facing Eldrazi multiple times. You know, I was at GP Detroit and I faced it 5 times in 8 rounds. You know, that was a story that people were telling quite frequently. We didn't see that with Dredge. You know, we saw some top eights, but it wasn't like multiple Dredge decks in the format. You know, like it was with Eldrazi, where you could play blue white Eldrazi, blue red Eldrazi, and they were all great. You know, the Dredge decks that we're seeing are pretty standard. You know, so I feel like the length of time, there hasn't been enough time. You know, the deck didn't really start getting good until the summertime, so like 6 months. I don't think we've seen the frequency to really warrant this, and I don't really feel like asking people to have sideboard cards when we already ask people to do that is really valid. And so, I am biased, but I do feel like the announcement was sort of silly. Mm-hmm. I just don't feel like the criteria is really there. And frankly, if you really wanted to hurt us, you know, Mishra's Photoshop made a really great joke of, you know, it's a really great band, and then just lots of pictures of Cathartic Reunion and lots of pictures of Prized Amalgam. Those would really be the things that hurt us. But I'm really excited to keep trying. I hope that the deck is still viable. I'm looking forward to taking it to regionals next month. And I'm looking forward to also more jokes about the thug life, because I'm going to be using Golgari thugs. And I didn't choose this thug life. It chose me, if you feel me. and the last bit of information from the announcement is what we didn't see. No changes to Legacy. I had to laugh. Ken Nagel's a young man who works for Wizards of the Coast. I believe he's a designer. And he had made this really sweet tweet about, you know, for the balance and diversity of the format, I will keep watch. And he had posted pictures of some of the cards that had faced bannings today. And I was like, that's really cute, girl, but you need to bring that car around to Legacy, because Miracles has been dominant for how long? and not even a top, not even a counterbalance, nothing. And just a lot of my friends who play Legacy are like, are you serious? Like, what is it going to take for a banning in Legacy? I just don't really know.
I feel like they're almost like a little afraid of the legacy players because they've got some feistiness to them. They're very, you know, protective of their cards and their decks and their fanciness. And I feel like, I mean, Wizards might just get reamed by some Miracle players. And maybe that's why they're a little hesitant to make any changes. They're just like, ooh, I don't want to poke that sleeping bear. This other smaller bear, that's fine. But that big bear,
Yeah, if you really want to see how passionate Legacy players are, click on the GP Louisville hashtag and you will get a taste of how fervent that fan base is. Cause I like to click on the hashtag. And even though I was at the event, I like to see like what other people are tweeting about. And they were very passionate this weekend. That's all I'm going to say. So before we go, there was an article making the rounds on Vox, actually, and it was about so voxeu.org, and it was about women in competitive environments, evidence from chess. And it was a really well-written article from a associate professor of economics in Spain, and she did a study that was basically discussing the theory of how the genders respond to playing against each other. And the theory that, you know, people like to say that the reason why we don't see women in certain competitive spaces is that they just don't like competition. And that this person was trying to prove that that's not necessarily the case and that it might be more about who the women are actually facing. And that when women played other women, they made all of the optimal plays. They played like you would expect them to. And I think they used chess as the variable here. And that when women played men, they were more likely to make mistakes. They were more likely to, you know, make subpar plays and whether or not this is really a thing. And it led to some interesting discussions, in terms of applying it to magic and whether or not we should be having female only events. And at the end of the article, they also mentioned the possibility of in chess, if they had a way to do like a blind tournament where you wouldn't even really know who you're playing against and if that would affect the players. And I was wondering what you all thought about this, about, you know, is this something you've experienced where you feel that you play differently, if you've known people who do, and ultimately if you feel like there should be some kind of segregation or even some blind tournaments where you don't know who you're playing against?
I mean, this isn't something that I've experienced personally. I've definitely gotten nervous playing against certain players, but it was always just because I thought they were better than me. Like, if I was playing against the best player in my local scene who I lose to all the time, I would get nervous. Or if I played against a pro player or someone with, you know, pro tour top eights, I would get nervous. But it never had to do with the gender of the player. It always had to do with skill, irrespective of gender. And I think the chess comparison is really interesting because the chess scene is arguably more toxic for women than the magic scene is, actually. Did I ever tell you guys about the time I went to a chess tournament 5 years ago?
I think you did, but I'm always down for a refresher.
It was the most othering experience I have ever had. Like, I literally walked into a room that was just full of dudes playing chess, and they all just, like, stared at me like I didn't belong there. And it was one of the most bizarre experiences I've ever had. It's definitely interesting to see this study. You know, obviously there were some interesting results from it, but, you know, there's definitely more they could do. Like, chess has this program called ICC, which is basically its equivalent of Magic Online. So I'd be interested to see if these researchers wanted to do some work with that to see, you know, if you're playing against someone who just has, you know, a username and you don't know who they are, what the results of that could be. But, you know, turning back to what you said about segregation, I don't think that's necessarily something that would help. I think, you know, we can't have separate but equal in magic. It has happened in chess, and it's just made the community more toxic because women literally cannot have, you know, women are graded on a different rating scale than men are, and it has perpetuated the belief that women are less than men. You know, I have a friend who is a woman grandmaster, and her rating is equivalent to a man who is what's called a national master, which means, you know, one of the best players in the country, not one of the best players in the world. And even though she's one of the best female players in the world, she doesn't measure up, even though she's really good at the game. And I don't know. I'm really glad that Magic doesn't have a system like that. And if it did, then I would be much less likely to participate competitively.
I really liked this article. I thought that the research and kind of the way they went about tackling the problem was really good. And they're like computer algorithms. It all sounded very well done. And I guess I'm kind of on the opposite tack of Hallie, where I kind of feel like it would, it'd be really interesting to look at like Modo female results versus, you know, in real life female results, and then playing like blind games of magic. I mean, maybe if there was like a half wall or something in front of you and you wore gloves, because I mean, females tend to have more feminine looking hands and whatnot. I don't know, something like something really weird, just for like science sake, to see how females compete. Because I think that while I don't feel an active nervousness whenever I play against a male, there may be some part of me that, like in my subconscious, that does cause me to make more mistakes or something because of a nervousness that now I've just grown used to, because, you know, 99% of the people I play against are male. You know, and then how that compares to playing in an all-female tournament, just for, you know, the science and the data behind it. Because I do feel like there are certain players, and they do happen to be male, that I play against and I'm nervous or whatever it may be. And, you know, is it because they're male and better than me, or is it because they're just better than me? I just feel like it's a really interesting question to ask, and I really liked the article, and especially how they had so many different ways to gather the data. I don't know, it just seemed like a very good thing for them to be exploring and writing about, especially in another country. You know, this was not an American-based author, which was great.
I thought the article was very interesting, and there were a couple of things that really did stand out to me. And one of them reminds me of something that Aaron has talked about before, about wearing the mantle. They talk about how these results are thus compatible with the theory of stereotype threat, which argues that when a group suffers from a negative stereotype, the anxiety experience trying to avoid that stereotype, just being aware of it, increases the probability of confirming the stereotype. And I just think about, you know, women having to prove something in a male-driven game or a male-driven profession or something like that, and they're so wrapped up in trying to not be a lot of these stereotypes that they might either end up embodying some of them, or they just might end up making mistakes because they feel like they have to prove that they're not that way. And it's just very interesting that it's been found to definitely affect women, especially in this circumstance. The other thing that I found interesting was in regard to the proposition of these possible blind tournaments. We kind of do something like that in Magic already, just with like Magic Online. If you don't know who your opponent is, they could be a woman, they could be a man, they could be someone that's non-binary. You have no idea who your opponent is, unless maybe it's a recognized name and you know who they are. And I wonder if that does make a difference to some players and how they play, if they're more relaxed, if they're, you know, not knowing who they're playing against. Does that help them let down their guard? You know, things like that. And I guess I just also found it just kind of, and I was very interested in chess at one point in my life. And I really did look up to Bobby Fischer when I was a lot younger, until I started learning a lot more about him. And and it's just kind of sad that in a game that is so thought and skill intensive and just very beautiful in its own way, that the people that play that game still have such a negative attitude against playing against women. And at least that's something I can say. For the most part, the Magic community realizes that they've not been the best in the past, and they're trying to be better. And I would hope that a game like chess and a game similar to it, or even, you know, sports and other things in general, would notice that you have made a negative impact on someone, and perhaps you should be changing your attitude.
Yeah, the article actually included a quote from Mr. Bobby Fischer where he says, and I quote, "They're all weak, all women. They're stupid compared to men. They shouldn't play chess, you know, they're like beginners." I was like, Hold my earrings. Like, did that just happen? There was another quote here for as recently as 2015. English Grandmaster Nigel Short said, girls just don't have the brains to play chess. And I thought that was very interesting. I do want to touch on one more thing before I kind of give my opinion here. They also mentioned that the women were not the only ones to play a little differently when faced against a man. The men also played a little differently. Specifically, the men would resign or concede later when they played against a woman. Whereas if a man is playing another man, he's more likely to concede early, and it's sort of seen as gentlemanly to do so, where it's like, you know, more honorable, or I will let you, you know, it's just more acceptable for a man to concede to another man, whereas with a woman, he's more likely to put his heels into the ground and really fight till the last breath, not give her any quarter. And, you know, some people might see that as admirable, or some people might see that as kind of petty. You know, Hallie, you brought up something really great about the segregation thing, and maybe segregation is the wrong word, but I did read an article a while back about esports and how there are some teams that are female only, in a female only bracket, and that they're not seen as good as the men, where, you know, you may have the best score in the female only bracket, but the men don't see that as a thing, where it's like, okay, well, you're really good in there, but yet you won't come and play with us. And so your mm-hmm. score in that bracket, when compared as a whole, you know, just doesn't really, really add up. You know, with my right. company, we're judged on two things. You know, we get these charts every day that talk about our production. And so I might be in the top 100 underwriters of my location, but when you compare me against every underwriter in my company, I might only be like 147. And so for some people that might be enough, you know, it might be enough for them to say in my bracket, I'm really, really good. But there are other people that would like to be good against the whole, mm-hmm. and say, I want to be one of the top 100 Magic players, not just the top 100 female Magic players. And that's a really delicate thing. And it seems like most women I know would not like that to be separate. And so I think that we're definitely on the right track. And I just thought this was really interesting to talk about, to see how sort of the other half lives, and whether or not this was something that we could relate to. Mm-hmm. So was there anything else on our minds before we wrap up the show?
I'm going to my first event at my local game store this weekend.
Yay!
I called them and reserved a spot, so I was like, I can't really back out because I'm taking this spot from somebody else if it fills up. So I have to go, and I'm going to go, and I'm going to get over my weird, irrational fear that I never thought I would have about going to a new local game store by myself, and it's going to be great. I hope.
Oh, I'm so excited to hear all about it.
Yes. So next Monday, we will see what there is to say. I hope their bathroom is clean.
That's the first, you're going to walk in and they're be like, oh, hey, nice to meet you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. 1 second. And then you walk in and you're like, I can play here.
Yes.
Hallie, what are your pre-release plans? Are you going to pull a Rocky and do 3 or 4?
I'm doing 3. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And Chris, I know you're braving the snow for the pre-release.
Yes, I'm at least going to do 1. We'll see what happens.
Okay. And Chris, I know when we were on the way home, you also mentioned that you wanted to ask our listeners for something.
Oh, shit. You cut this out. What the fuck was it again?
So when we were driving home, we made a stop in Indiana, I believe. Oh. And Chris found a refreshment that they're not able to find here.
Oh, yes. So I actually talked about it with Nick when I got home, too. So back when we went to Oakland last January, we stopped at Target and I got an Arnold Palmer that was a iced tea and lemonade, like sweet tea peach mix. And it was like the nectar of the gods. And I've been trying to find it ever since we left there, to no avail. And we stop at the gas station, and I'm like, well, I guess I'll just get this one. And then I see it there, and I'm like, oh. So I tell the nice woman that's like standing not too far away from her that works there, if you have more of this, I'll buy the whole case. And unfortunately, there was only 4 left, but I bought them all. I carried them out like they were my children. It was great. They're in the refrigerator. Yep. I'm currently drinking one. I'm going to try to save them as long as I can. But yes, they are the peach Arnold Palmer half and half sweet tea lemonade. If you have this by you, and I will take a picture of it like a wanted poster, let me know. And tell me if you can send it my way, because I promise you it's wonderful. Buy some for yourself. It's very good. So yeah, that was the little treat on the way home. Yeah, it's pretty fantastic.
Have you checked Amazon, Chris? Because they have a lot of weird drinks on Amazon. Might get Prime shipping, get it in 2 days.
I have. I think it was like $40 for like a case of it or something. I was like, what? That's kind of whack. Only just because, like, it's 99 cents. You're going to charge me more than a dollar something for each one. But if that's the way to get it, fine. It's just kind of sad to me that I can't find it anywhere around here. I randomly find it in California, and then we're, like, at the, like, ass end of Kentucky or something like that, going back into Indiana, and it's just, like, the grail, like, you have chosen wisely type of situation, and I'm just like, this is everything. So, yes, it was really amazing to find, and I'm going to hold on to them as long as I can to savor the wonderfulness.
Yeah, sweet tea was everywhere. It was very much a fixture of Kentucky, and I had never seen so many places offer me sweet tea before. And it was the most ludicrous thing because these cans are not small. So Chris is hauling, like, they gave them a box. So, like, they have, like, the lid of a box, and Chris lines them up so that they fit perfectly. So there's four monstrous cans, and Chris is proudly walking up to the cash register, and I can't. I'm just laughing the whole time. And Chris drops the box on the counter and is like, I'd like all of these. And the cashier does not even blink. Like, it's a perfectly normal thing that this customer has every single can of sweet tea in their possession. And Chris proudly strolls out of there like they just got a new puppy. And I'm just laughing. And I'm like, I can't believe you bought every single can. And they're like, I'm going to ask all of our listeners too. And I'm like, you might regret that because they might give you so many you don't know what to
do. Yeah, you might get just like cases and cases.
That's fine.
But they were just so proud. And then, like, you know, the way that the gas station soda things work is you take one and more roll down. And so, like, we take one, and I'm like, oh, there's only two, Chris. We got to go. And then Chris is like, no, there's two more back there. And so they roll down. And I just didn't know how many more we're going to keep rolling. And it was just the most ludicrous thing.
I was just sad it stopped at four. Because, like, legit, yeah, if they had had a case, I would have happily bought it and been like, money well spent. So, yeah. If you send me any, I will, like, literally, like, Scrooge McDuck, like, swim through them or something. It would be wonderful.
Also, shout out to the listener that came up to me at the GP. I don't remember their name off the top of my head, but they gave me peach rings because that seems to be the snack that I eat while streaming. And they were like, I have some peach rings. Would you sign? How many peach rings for an autograph? And I was like, none. Are you kidding me? But they brought me two bags. And so I ate every single peach ring and it was glorious. But shout out to that particular listener. You were very, very sweet. And they also asked me to sign their ad nauseam, which I'd never signed before. So that was really, really cool. Cool. And Kentucky was just great.
I was wondering where you got those shits. So I was like, where'd she get peach rings? And I was like, I'm sure she has her sources.
They tweeted at me first. They tweeted at me first and offered to bribe me. They were like, you know, how many peach rings for an autograph? And I was like, I wouldn't charge you for an autograph. Are you crazy? And then sure enough, they came up to me in the first. I just see them, you know, holding out two big bags of peach rings proudly. And I'm like, oh, it was like a lure. I just came walking over like, oh, I see them. And shinies. It was great.
A wild Aaron appears.
Right. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. And you can also find me on Instagram and Snapchat, also at HalCanSan.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's MeanMugger. Or on Twitch, twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is yothkriz@gmail.com. My Snapchat is CryptoCommand with K's, and my blog is backtablesmtg.wordpress.com. I also forgot to say to Scott and Eddie, it was nice to see both of you again. I can't wait to see you guys at future events, and thanks so much for all the wonderful love and support that we got at the GP.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalEstrus. That's OriginalEstrus. You can email me at OriginalEstrus.com, twitch.tv/OriginalEstrus. I stream every Tuesday and Thursday starting at 8:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket, and you can email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you folks next week. Bye-bye.